All right. Well, let me go ahead and call us back together. A request has been made, and we aim to please, and I think we can meet this request. Request has been made to get a copy of the PowerPoint presentation. And so Dr. Carney has agreed to do that for $19.95 plus shipping. No. What we'll do is we will follow up with him after this event, and I will have Carrie to do one of two things. Probably the first, not the latter. I'll have her to get it posted on the Church Planning Center's website, and you can go there and you can download it. That's probably what we'll do because we've done that in times past. The second would be to have her to email it out to everyone. But I'll leave that up to her. The easiest will probably be for her just to email you because she has everyone's email address if you RSVP'd. If you did not and you just slipped in and you want to get a copy of the PowerPoint presentation, make sure I have your email address before you leave. And so that way she'll have a list of that. And so when that becomes available, she can let you know that you can pick that information up. So, all right. Well, we'll continue on.
Okay. Well, you know, I hate lectures. I'm a very much an interactive kind of guy, so I apologize. It's been kind of like a fire hose, but we'll start talking now. This is where it gets interesting. This is the benefit, for what it's worth, of many years of working in the field, and trial and error, and God's shown me some things. I want to talk to you about. You talk about holistic process. You want to talk about aha moments, engagement, ownership, and all that. I want to tell you something. It's no rocket science, and one of you guys is going to invent a better way of communicating this than me, and that's fine. I don't care. I did have a good friend of mine, Dr. Bob Ryan. He helped me with some of this, and I can tell you each word. God gave me each component of this as I went down the road. But the point is, it's just a process. And it's a biblical process, and it makes sense. When I partner with local churches, these are some of the things we talk about. And let me explain first of all, that I think it's important that you count the cost. You think about whatever event or activity you're going to do and what's going to happen afterwards. Most times, the biggest issue we have in ministries, there's no follow-up. Almost everybody's event-driven. Someone said, Rich, this was a great turnout. I said, well, fantastic, but what makes that so good? Well, we've never had 200 people show up before, but what makes that so good? I mean, and that's it. People come, and they'll do the cotton candy, by the way, never have hot dogs. Why would you never want hot dogs at a block party? They're bad for you. That's funny. Come on. I want you to think. I want an answer.
International.
Okay, that's good. I didn't think of that. That's very good. That's actually excellent. But, okay, let me help you out. Why would you want, why hot dog versus greasy or barbecue chicken? Why would barbecue chicken be better?
You know what it is.
Oh. That's good. Okay. I have an ulterior motive here. Okay. Hot dog you can pick up and walk away with. Greasy chicken, or I should say barbecue chicken, you're messy and you sit down and eat right there. And then you can do what when they do that? Share Jesus and wash your hands, yeah. Okay. It's just stuff like that, okay? Now, I got that about 12, 15 years ago from a guy who does this and everything, so came from somebody else, but steal all the good ideas in the world, you know? That's what we're here for. By the way, I'll probably say this again. Best practice is the most important thing in the church today for me. In Iraq right now, I got several buddies that are right now there. You know what? When we see an IED, improvised explosive device, we see it's in a garbage can or it's in some kind of... We take pictures of it right away, and what we do, we immediately send it on the web to all our buddies, all the different units in Iraq. Within an hour, we know, oh, there's another one right there. It keeps me from getting blown up. Do we do that in the ministry? No! We wait till somebody writes a book. which is good, but usually it's a day late and a dollar short, and they're all principles. They're not usually practical, okay? So, you know, I'm going to talk about this again, so it's one of the things I harp on. If you really want to engage in an association, churches, everything else, figure out a way to share best practice. I tried that last month and I failed. Well, why did you fail? Drill down, find out. Well, that was a success. Why was it a success? Drill down, find out why. Man, we do that in business world all the time. We do it in the military all the time. We do it, well, sometimes in the political world. But the church, we don't share. We're all isolated and alone. Okay, I'm preaching again. Let me get back to this. What I want to do is I want to share with you this model. Okay, first of all, there is the conversion. There's the event. And I've got it written up here, too. I call it the God event. It's 101, or it could be with a Billy Graham crusade. It doesn't matter. It's the event. We have a lot of books written on events. And you can call or write Lifeway, NAM, and you can get, you know, we know how to do events really well. That's our forte. But there is a conversion, though. What happens, though, is that you need to ask some questions. How are your people prepared to present the gospel? Just some basic things. But most of this stuff we do pretty well. But I would tell you, here, let me give you a little tip. If you're going to do an event, I use the word block party a lot too much. I don't mean, because there's 1,000 other ways to share the gospel. It just always seems to come back to my mind. But whatever activity you're doing, make sure that all the labor is done. If you're a big church, you can do it with two different teams. But most of us are not. We're small churches. You go get your brother from across the town. He brings all his congregation over. They do the cotton candy, the greasy chicken, the jumpy machine or whatever. They do all the labor. Our church, what we're going to do is, what are we going to do? If they're doing all the labor, what are we doing?
Taking the people back to our church.
Yeah, he's never going to come over and help again. Well, what are we doing? If they're doing all the labor and we got all these people, what are we supposed to be doing?
Interacting with the people.
That's it. That's it. And you say, well, duh, but they don't do that. Okay? And I won't partner with a church when it's the same group of people that are doing the labor. I mean, I'm not strict on this, but generally, if they're doing all the labor, how can you do the jumpy? I mean, you can share the gospel while you're doing the jumpy thing or doing some music, but it's not as good. So I need to be out there eating chicken, having a good time, relaxing, saying, hey, tell me about your children. What school are they in? You know, that's what you do. And there's another reason. These people are going to go back across town, the missionaries that came over. Thank you very much. We're staying here, and I've already made a relationship with you. And then when we do follow-up, it's me and you. Oh, I remember you. See, it's just things like that. So very, very important. What plans do you have to keep evangelism a priority? What are you planning to do intentional evangelism? Okay, now, planning for evangelism. I'm not going to go over these. I'm going to send it to you. It's the same stuff that you've heard 100 times. I'm not inventing anything new here. I copied this from 100 other guys that did it better than me. The point is, we have the event. You've got to have a checklist, and you've got to go through the things you need to have the event set up. Okay, now here's the thing I want to, the first thing I think is really unique. I come across, this is supposed to be a bridge here. I call it the 1-1-1 bridge. People come to know the Lord, and they say, well, they're going to go to our Sunday school. And, you know, that's not true. Getting them into the front door, and if you're really true about this, most people in society are not going to go to your church for a while. They'll go to Starbucks with you, but they're not going to go to your church. If we're really serious about reaching people, and I know we are, I'm not saying you're not, I'm just saying we've got to work more strategically and effectively, and this is a way of doing it. You go across the 1-1-1 bridge. It stands for, what are you going to do the first day, first week, and first month, okay, with that new convert? What do you want to tell them? And by the way, I've got some ideas on that. It doesn't matter. As a denominational person, I'm not selling anything. I'm following a process. You've got to go back and pray, Pastor. What would you do the first day, first week? And I make them sweat. What's the principle behind making a pastor sweat on those kinds of things? Anybody?
They see God guidance.
Bingo! They own it. They don't go back. Carney told me to do such and such. It didn't work out. No, they take ownership. And guess what? They grow in their confidence, which is more important. I want to give them confidence. And that's my, I'm supposed to be skilled at that. That's what my job is, to help them grow. I'm discipling to a certain extent. Okay, one bridge. You decide, what are you going to do the first day, first week, and first month? And there's some great materials out there, and I have some suggestions that sometimes, but they're different for children as they are for seniors. They're different for families, okay? So you cross that. Now, that's I'm just repeating myself here. Okay, now we go to the 777 bridge, and we've crossed over, and really a lot of people in between here hopefully will have entered your church. But this bridge here is interesting. This bridge here, we have, first of all, seven disciplines. Now, I know there are more than seven disciplines, but it sounded better to say seven, 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 okay? So you start them off giving them seven. And this is so important. You know, we're really supposed to be making disciples. So often, I can tell you, I wasn't discipled. I begged for it, but nobody. I went to Sunday school, and I still hear this. I went to Sunday school as a young boy, and I wasn't discipled. I heard certain things. I didn't know anything about a Bible study is probably the closest thing that I heard about. So it's very important at a very new birth time to put in that DNA what it means to be a disciple. And don't just give them a book and wave them goodbye. How dare you? I mean, sometimes you don't have a choice. But we're making disciples. Jesus had 12 men he loved on, okay? And one of those was a demon. And the point is that you need to take the time. And guess what? Can you do it, Pastor? No! So what do you got to do? Give it away. Lose control. Teach, disciple, key men. Those 10 or 12 men, then they can disciple, okay? So that's one thing. Next thing is develop seven new peers. Hey, I stole this from the Mormons. They're good at it. What you do is you say, hey, is there anybody you could tell this story to? I'm talking about the seven old friends, excuse me. Are there seven old friends, people that know you could tell the story? Of course. Almost all my friends are lost. I mean, I'm making that up, but whatever. And the point is they're ready to go. And they go out there and share. Then it's seven new friends. Now, we know this from a lot of literature, Dr. Rainer and a lot of other people that are better at this than I ever will be, that you have to have seven contacts. You have to be touched, friendships from the church for you to connect. You've got to be organized. I can put these up there, but you've got to think them through. Okay, the greeter's going to do it. The Sunday school guy's going to do it. I've got people on the look out there, you know. You've got to figure it out. Each church is different. If I had time to sit down with each of them, we could talk it through. But you don't do this, your back door is wide open. They're going to go in the door and right back out the other door. If they have seven contacts and seven people that love on them, they're going to connect. Not guaranteed, but more times than not, they are. And that takes a lot of work. Okay? Ministry is really thinking it through and putting it into work. Now, The seven old friends, I got something. I've always wanted to do this. I would love to come to Kentucky, to Louisville, and get with my brother, or Cincinnati, and my fellow DOMs here, and stay and say, okay, let's really do this. Let's find out who is the guy that's going to do some kind of evangelical activity, or Billy Graham, whatever. I would love to have a whole bunch of us lined up biblically, two by twos. Okay, we have a convert at the end of it. And we meet them at Starbucks, okay? Who do you know? Well, tomorrow afternoon, bring everybody here that you talk to. They come in the door with four or five people. Well, guess what? If they have four or five people, that means that's got to be 8 to 10 people that have to already be there that are Christian that can disciple. I really believe that one of the reasons that we don't get too far is we don't have enough Christians willing to disciple. I've always wanted to apply that and see how far we could go. Because it's a lot of, again, I'm going to, a broken record, it's a lot of work, okay? Don't get in the ministry if you're not willing to work. I don't have any time for people that don't. Okay, reproduction. Now, reproduction up here, I call it equip and reproduce. And that's where you go deep in your Sunday schools and other evangelistic activity. And where you carry out the 11177 bridges. This is where you reconnect. People up here say, hey, I'll help with this now. Hey, I'll help with the event over here. This is where you equip them to really with the skills they need to do the deeper things, okay? Now, prayer. The prayer is in the middle and is very, very, very important. I have it going in all directions. When you have the event, you've already heard, you were prayer walking, we're thinking it through. We get a list of names. There's someone praying for you right there, interceding. As you go through and they get to know more and they're doing the disciplines, they're saying, well, I'm having a tough time with this. There's people here interceding for this. And all the way around, it's got to be integrated. And they've got to know. And by the way, if you're an intercessor, the worst thing you can do to an intercessor is say, pray for this and pray for that, and never tell them what happened. It's got to be interactive. They've got to know how effective their prayers are being or where to engage. This is a weapon, folks. The Word of God is a two-edged sword, God tells us. And that sword cuts through right to our heart, okay? Prayer is the same way. Why shoot artillery way off over here? Why not gauge it in, see where the enemy is or see where the issue is, the spiritual force, and shoot effectively? That's the kind of stuff you need to have. So, again, you're seeing it again here. And I have, by the way, I'm glad I saw that. If you'd be so kind, make sure everybody gets one of those. I have a handout with this on it. And it talks about, and I have some of the things we've used in the past. It can be different for you. It talks about different materials and different ways of going about it. Now, let me just say this. This 111 bridge and the 777 bridge are very important. I call this follow-through care. Now, let me ask you, let's interact on this just a little bit. Other than the God encounter, what is all this on this side here? It's discipleship. Very good. And what's the God encounter? It's evangelism. Now, generally, what are we taught and what do we gauge ourselves towards mostly? Evangelism, right? And I'm here to tell you that evangelism is very important, but shame on us for allowing so many people to be born again and to die on the vine. Let me just tell you my story. I was a little boy. I don't know what age I was, but pretty young. And I went to church all by myself. Mom and Dad, I didn't know this at the time, they didn't go to church anymore. They went at first, but they didn't after a while because, this is what I found out. The pastor ran off with the secretary, and then the second pastor ran off with the money. And so I guess they were a little disillusioned. I went to First Baptist Church all those years by myself, every time the door opened. And I realized later, of course, at the time I didn't realize that was God. God was grooming me for His work. And I loved it. And I'll never forget youth pastors. I got a thing for youth pastors. I went up to the youth pastor. It's a pretty good sized church. It's First Baptist Church, Garland, Texas. And I said, sir, I want to know more about Jesus. I said, well, you'll get, and he actually patted me on the head. And he said, you'll get that in Sunday school. Well, sir, I am in Sunday school and I want to know more. Go back to Sunday school. Man, don't do that. I mean, I was hungry, and I spent years just trying to figure it out, and it was tough. And so, discipleship, folks, God's really taken me on a journey. The Chinese church, like I said earlier, they have it right. They've been persecuted, they've been martyred, and they're going to take the gospel to the Muslim world. I dare say any of us are going to be that bold. Maybe when I was younger. And that's another commentary right there, by the way. Folks, some of you guys are going to figure out better ways of doing it. That's fine. It doesn't matter. There's mega churches or large churches that are doing things. I'll tell you a story. I was teaching firearms. I've been around the world teaching all kinds of things. And I was, I think I was in Chile, and I was on a firing range, and a gentleman I was teaching, and there's a certain way to hold a weapon and a certain way to fire and all that. He got up and he got there on the range. He started, it was really funny. He got up there, he got like this, he got his weapon out, and he goes, pow, 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 and he starts shooting. I go, oh, gosh. He hit the bullseye every time, every single time. And my guys on my team says, well, we got to retrain him. I said, no, you don't. Let him go. He got the bullseye. I said, forget it. And also, he looks a little funny. And, you know, he's like one in a million. That's really rare. If anybody has ever shot weapons, that's real rare. They have that kind of control. So what am I saying? Pick a process, biblical process, and follow it. Okay? This is not Saddleback. This is not Willow Creek, although they've repented, I understand. That's a little side comment. You're going to have to edit that one. But there's, folks, brothers and sisters, all I would say to you is this, is that think about what you're doing, how you're going to go forward with it, organize it, and if this is not your cup of tea, if everything I'm saying up here is Greek, so to speak, that's okay. Just remember you got to put somebody alongside you that can understand how to read this kind of Greek, okay? Because anybody that's a project manager will see this and they'll say, oh, that's easy. I mean, that's where God gifted them, wired them, okay? So I think I would say to you is that in this, there's a lot of work, isn't there? Let me ask you, anybody have a question on this? How would this work in your church, your association, or how would you go about this? We're all growing, you know, and we will continue. I guarantee you, I learn something every day. I learn something all the time about how to improve. This is a little sidebar. I probably get this. I think it's called the Bible Stick. How many of you heard about it? It's an audio, like an MP3 kind of a thing. It's on, do they have it? Is it right, Bible Stick? Okay. Anyway, it's out of Albuquerque. It's really cool. I got this as best practice. I learned this from some other key churches. And they have it in all these different languages. Most people don't read around the world. Obviously they can hear the word. And the cool thing is, this is starting to take, you're going to hear about it because it's starting to pick up fire around. And I bought one for my children. In 40 days, you can hear the whole New Testament. It's like 28 minutes a day. And you put it, you know, nowadays it's no big deal to put something on your ear, listen, phone or whatever. You do the same thing, you can hear the Bible. And it's a cool thing. And you're getting the Word of God every day. And so we're going to do that as a family. And I'm going to watch this project. They're doing it citywide in Albuquerque. I want to see how it really goes. And I want to learn from their good things and things they don't do. Best practice, I want to learn. And then I may apply it in some of our other cities. But the languages are really cool because you can get them in different languages. And what a great way to get the Bible out. And here's another thing I just learned is that in Africa, in some of the areas where they don't have electricity, they've taken the Jesus video has gone well, but they found out the groups that form out of that start to die out. What they did was they brought in, as the coolest thing, a box that they can crank. In this crank, and it keeps the battery alive, and they have the Word of God in their language communication. So everybody comes every week, once a week or whenever, and they crank it up, and they hear in their language, you know, right through the New Testament. And then they say, okay, what did you hear? Well, obviously, they've not been through the whole Bible, and they say, well, God says this, God says this. And then 3 weeks later, they say, well, yeah, but God said this back in the first chapter. And, you know, they're learning. And guess what they found out? When they started bringing the boxes out, they not only the 60 to 100 people grew, but they started splitting because they had so many people. And the church is growing exponentially. A cool thing. Now, that's a best practice I learned from an international missionary. This other thing I learned from a mega church, that new cutting edge. That's the kind of stuff we should be sharing. And I share this with you as a process that we've seen that has worked. What happens is as they do this, the pastor sees fruit born. People come to know the Lord, and they say, wow. And it gives, and a lot of guys, I'll be honest with you, do you know what I mean when I say turnkey? It's a term we use out there in construction business and building projects. One person or one company does all the blueprints generally, and they'll build the process, and they'll give you the keys. They call that turnkey. One organization is responsible. If you have a turnkey process, it makes it a lot easier to follow. Now, can you adjust it and change it? Yes. But it's just those kinds of... You're too busy in life, guys. We're moving too fast. It's like in the military. The reason we have what we call standard operating procedures. In the military, we call the SOPs. It's to make life easier. If we're in a truck going down a road and there's an ambush, you know, there's certain commands that the platoon sergeant gives and everybody scatters in a certain direction. It should be no different in the church. Bill, there's someone over here that wants to know more about Jesus. You shouldn't have to think, well, how am I going to do that? You should have already thought through that. You should have people lined up. If there's a crisis in the church down up front, somebody's acting up, it shouldn't be what do we do. It should already be thought through. Those kind, what that helps the pastor do his job so much better, okay? And so it's, now, one other thing I would say here is this. This is best done, really is best done, with volunteers from the outside, especially on the event side. Folks, you don't need people from Texas or Indiana to come necessarily here. That's great. You just need, generally, you need somebody that's on the other side of town. I talk to pastors and associations all the time. Associations do not need, it's great what the denomination would respond or the state would respond. Associations need to mobilize their pastors. And mostly, make sure they're geographically not co-located, but on the opposite side of town, sides of town. It's a mission trip. And they have a blast. And they go back more inspired than ever before. And guess what? You start to build unity in your association, by the way. And by the way, I'm going to tell you a story from Phoenix so you don't get everybody gets scared because everybody's turf-minded. Which isn't biblical. In Phoenix, we had two Hispanic churches. They were about 2.5 miles, 3 miles max from each other. We were talking about, it wasn't this sophisticated, this model, but we talked about that you had to have another group of people in or have two different groups from the event and to follow up. It had to be separate groups of people. They were so small, they didn't have enough people. They had to be the same people. They said, well, we can't help you. We can't sponsor your event or help sponsor your event. They go, oh. I said, however, why don't you develop an activity event? And why don't you develop an activity event, Pastor? And this is what we'll do. You pour out your church over here to help them do theirs, and then you pour out to help them. At first, they were scared to death. Why? To take each other's members. Scared to death. Okay. Well, here's the moral of the story. They did the event. And I'm glad to tell you, it's a fact. Both churches grew by 25% in 2 months. Not one member was lost to either church. Guess what? They're today. They're very close friends as pastors. The churches are very close. They actually do events together all the time. Folks, the Lone Ranger is very American myth. It is not biblical. If there's anything today I've said, learn how to work together. That's what we're supposed to be able to do. So anyway, this is a process I think that you can take to the bank as a good starting point. It works in local churches, works in large groups of churches, and I've learned along the way. Now, what I want to do is I want to transition to another presentation. But
you know, I'm hoping that through the process of hearing some of these different ideas and principles, that if every 2 or 3 minutes he's not saying urban city, urban metro, or something like that, that you don't shift into neutral and forget sort of the whole theme of the conference that we're doing today, but to begin to filter this through your context and think, how would this work in the urban environments around where we live? What would that look like? Especially this notion of cooperation. Jim Slack with International Mission Board, who is actually going to be doing our next half-day conference in April, I believe that's right, April or March. I'll have the dates before we leave today to let you know. He's coming to talk about immigration, cultural shifts within North America, and how that impacts North American missions today. I heard him do a presentation one time within the past year related to just the need for new churches in many of those major cities that Rich was talking about. And when you begin to look at that population change, population growth, the diversity, the need, the city environment is just, it is a beast. It is huge. It's a monster. And as he mentioned, we really do come from an environment that is very turfish. I think our brothers and sisters outside of North America, especially Southern Baptists outside of North America, are beginning to see the strengths of cooperation with other Great Commission Christians. And I think we're going to have to learn that here in North America. It's going to be tough for some of us to do that. That doesn't mean that we become ecumenical and we throw out all of our theological convictions and healthy missiological practices. But it does say something about us being discerning about how to work and cooperate with the larger body of Christ, because some of these environments are just enormous. The diversity is huge, and we're going to have that partnership with other Great Commission believers that are out there. Something else that he's brought up just recently within the past hour or so that I think is important for us to keep in mind is to really begin to think through this issue of connecting with leaders in cities, connecting with people that are key, critical people. In some of those cases, you'll find those people to be persons of peace, people who will come to faith like Lydia did in Acts 16, or if not, that they will be people of influence that can put you into contact with people, that can open up huge amount of doors for ministry within the urban context. Having said that, let's just, if you've got a moment, let's just do a question and answer and pause here for a second, because there may be some things that are sure. that need to be addressed, because a lot of information sometimes overwhelms us, and we're dying to ask a question but haven't had a chance to do so. So let's just do that for a couple moments.
I appreciate J.D. mentioning about evangelicals. I do use the Baptist Faith and Message on corporation as my guide, and I have some other outlines from them. By the way, just so you know, people vote themselves in or out. If they're not like us, they usually don't join us. I've not had a problem yet. I've not had a problem. It's not been an issue. So. Oh, how are we? Where have we been most effective reaching ethnic groups? Well, and some of that's going to come out, some of these principles, but most times where we're most effective is when you look for, identify indigenous leadership. God always, he brings a man or a woman of peace to your attention. And it's mentoring, discipling that individual, and strengthening them, because they're already cross-cultural, to do the mission. Usually, this holds true, our Hispanic churches, which, by the way, we've got to do a bigger job on that, a much stronger outreach, because it's a strong population flow into America, and it will not abate. It's going to continue. And what I would say is that in the short term, it's identifying pastors and teaching them seminary training, education in some respects. Sometimes, if you want to reach these ethnic groups, you're going to have to go down another step, and that is Bible schools. A lot of times, Bible schools are the most effective and important to a lot of ethnic groups, because they're not going to be able to leave their location. And sometimes our seminaries are not in those locations. So they get that, and that is really a great underpinning for them. And so that's one aspect of it. As far as all the principles I've brought up, they hold true. It doesn't matter what color and what language you use. They're the same, and they've made a big inroad. So a lot of it is, we talked about earlier, with immigrant populations, first generation, immigrant services, passport services, housing, jobs, all of that. Those are the ministries, and whether it's Catholic or whether it's Southern Baptist, whatever, whoever's out in the community doing that, they have the people's ears. And that's where we got to go. You've got, and of course, what do we do in suburbia? We make large buildings for our student ministries. I'm not condemning it. That's not what I'm. Don't hear me. That they're reaching their culture group. Okay. Well, but you've got to think the same way for these other different ethnic groups. You've got to think, how am I going to reach these folks? And so those are some of the things that we've seen. And I get with you offline and tell you some, give you connections with some people that might be of more of assistance to you. Well, that's a loaded question, isn't it? it's all across the spectrum. There's some areas where they really got it together. I'll tell you, one of the best cordial places you ever go to is Phoenix, Arizona. There's three associations. It's the one on the northern side. Boy, they're rocking. I'll tell you the best practice. Best practice, they started with $200 in their bank account for church planting, and 7 years later, they've got $1.2 million, I think, in the bank. That didn't come from CP dollars. Didn't come from the state convention. It came from the local church. They set up a special fund, and they're just rocking. And what they do is they put you at a table. There's five or six local pastors, and they are your coach, mentors, and everything else. They're actually the people that sign for they're paid for the land that you're going to plant your church. They also will buy or pay for your first building to get up. And so their names are on that loan. And so they take their mentorship a little bit very serious. But their track record is off the charts because these are guys that have been planting churches out there for a long time. So they really walk you through the numbers and make sure you're called and make sure you're willing to work. And then when you have an issue, guess what? They pour their people out to come over and help you. So that's one of the best models I've ever seen. And it continues. They're off the charts. When I was there, we had, I think they had four churches over 400. Today, it's 18 churches. And they have, I think it's four or five churches that are, one church is a mega church. And there's four or five closing in on being a coming mega churches now. So, I mean, it's grown. And, of course, you could say, well, that's Phoenix. Everybody wants to go to Phoenix. We saw the data. Everybody's going there. Okay? But there are other areas where we're seeing growth and seeing churches grow. Church plants, I think the most important thing is on a couple levels. One, and I've planted a lot of churches with a lot of church planters. One, you got to make sure you're called. It cannot be an emotional pull. It's got to be God. And only you know that. And that's very, very important. You've got to go back. Why does it say don't be quick to lay hands on a man in the Bible? Why does it say that? That's a question.
Prove himself.
Whatever's inside of you. There was the old missionary at the table, English missionary with some new a couple. They were talking about the mission field, and they were asking him all these details. What about this? How do you handle that? What about this? What about that? And he hits the table real strong, and the tea starts coming out of the cup, and he says, young man, be careful what you put in you, because what is in you will come out. And what the point is that you cannot contend with every contingency. You've got to work on what's in you, because whatever's in you will come out. And so as a church planner, you've got to make sure that you've got the right stuff in you and that it really is the Holy Spirit speaking to you. And why do I emphasize that so much? Because we probably accept one candidate out of every 10 or 12. It's probably even higher than that, probably about 15. A lot of guys are looking for jobs, and it's not a job. It's a lot of work, but it's not a job. And I appreciate this so much more the longer I'm in the ministry. It's really hard work, and it's really thankless work in many times. But you've got to be able to be called by the Holy Spirit. So that's, I emphasize that big time. Okay, the other part is you do need a good system. And sometimes associations are fantastic. Sometimes associations are struggling. They've not had the experience. Some have only had one successful church plant in a decade. That's true. That's hard data. Cleveland had one successful church plant in 11 years. Okay? We were able, by God's grace, to plant 16 in 24 months. I wish more had survived. 14 survived out of the 16. But not a bad ratio. Okay? So you want to look for an area that you really do want. And you can do it all by yourself if you have to, but that's not a recommended. You definitely got to have mentors. You got to have coaches. And by the way, because of the email or the website, you can have mentors and coaches and sponsors from all across the nation. They don't have to be geographically co-located, although it's nice to have, very nice to have. So that's just a few things I would say about that. Let me go on with my presentation, and we'll have some more questions later on. City reaching, you've had a chance to read this at this point. I think it's very important that we have to look at, when we look at cities, what does it mean to be catalytic? That is the key word that I go by. My job is to be catalytic. Only the church has been ordained by God to bring people into the kingdom. Only the church transforms lives. Now, I share my faith. I help church planters out all the time, but it's only the local church that's empowered by the Lord and not the denomination. The local church can do more by working together than anything in the world. Very, very important. Foundational to this hope is a tangible and growing reality of spiritual unity and holiness. Folks, you're not going to change an urban area. You're not going to change anywhere if there's not spiritual unity and holiness. Most of the times people say, well, I'm going to... There's folks I can mention in a certain part of the country. I've had a chance to interview several city-reaching movements. In one area, they spent years and years and years and years on pastoral unity. Noble. Very noble. But they've not gone too far. I would rather get out there and get my hands and arms and legs and everything else dirty, cut up by doing ministry together. You build more unity through work out in the trenches than I think anything else. And I've seen that proven again and again and again. So pick out something, anything, and go to work. And as you do that, and by the way, this principle holds true in your church, by the way. Some of your most difficult people, I call them cave people. Anybody know what cave means in this context? Citizens against virtually everything. There's these people are in your churches, and some of the best way to get them focused in the right way is put them to work and doing God's work. And so I hold the same thing holds true for all of us. I think the passion goal is so important. We want to see neighborhoods moved and transformed and Jesus lifted up. And to do that, we need to see long-term impact through its short-term investments. It's long-term. You give short-term investments in some of this activity for long-term. You got to keep a long-term viewpoint. You need to create an organization that's durable and pliable, that trusts local leadership when you're doing these kind of things. You need accurate and honest assessments. No, you know, it takes me three... Now, some of you guys may be humored by this in denominational work. It takes me three or four visits before I really get down underneath the skin to find out what's really going on in that city or that state. Of course, when you're being interviewed, everybody puts on their best face. But you got to assess what's going on honestly to understand the spiritual health and capacity. You need to know where your starting point is. The true measure of most ministries, though, in the urban environment are 5 and 10 years down the road. They're not the first year or two. If you're not in it for the long haul, you will be sorely disappointed. And then I think it's real important that society's domains are addressed. What do I mean? There's business, schools, education, legal, family, the arts, church. All of those are key domains in society. You're going to have to address, if you're going to go in an urban environment, this is very key. And there's some ministries out there that are doing this. These areas, these domains of society have got to be addressed. And you could have ministry outreach to each one. El Paso is a good example. They're trying to do this out there right now. And they've had some success. And they really got, the city hall really took notice when all these businessmen started coming together and praying for their city. Not all these men were Christian. And it's really made a big difference. So, that's another aspect of this. It's very, very important. It boils down to being catalytic, as I said before. I think that what I can do, when you talk about being catalytic, you know, it's kind of like a chemical, it is a chemical reaction. And as we come in with maybe some experience, maybe some best practice, and the church comes in knowing the will of God for them, and we're all working together, not just locally, but nationally and across all these spectrums, there's a neat kind of connection there that's something new. And it's really neat to see the denomination work effectively together like that. It's hard. It's not easy. But when it really goes, it really takes off, and it's a special thing. And so I use that word catalytic again and again. Okay, again, the population. Why are we in the cities? It's because 80% of the U.S. lives in an urban environment, and 50% now of the world. Now, here's some truths I've learned. I call this a room with a view. These are just things that God has shown me about cities and work with people. First of all, in cities, you need men and women of peace. Jedi spoke about this a while ago. You've got to look for men and women of peace. This is essential. Whether this is in your local church, you can take it any level. You've got to have men and women of peace. They are absolutely critical. They are the people with the influence. They are the people with the spiritual authority to move people forward and make a difference. First the pastor, then the body. Now, some people I love would disagree, but I'm here to tell you, you've got to address pastors. They're the doorkeepers, and rightfully so. They're the men that need our attention. You've got to address pastors, then you will have an opportunity to minister to the body. Very, very important out there. Okay, pastors are isolated, lonely, and discouraged. Now, am I right or wrong, my fellow brothers in denominational work? Is that right or wrong? Okay? I've visited pastors that I was the first denominational person of any level at any time to come visit. And it was amazing. Bless his heart, he's a good, hard-working brother. And he started weeping, and it was just a special moment. He said, I've been out here by myself for so long. It's just so good to see somebody else. And of course, then I start weeping. But I wish I could say that was isolated, but I've seen it again and again and again. We need to know that pastors need our encouragement. They do not need our condemnation. We need to figure out ways to uplift their ministries. Spiritual warfare tastes and feels like hell. I said that for emphasis. It does. When you're working in cities, there's going to be spiritual warfare. And if you do not have a group of people that are surrounding you, praying for you, stop, go out, and find some people to pray for you. It is too serious a business. Satan owns the pond for the time being. And we're taking a stone and we're skipping it across this steel pond. He's going to take notice. People come to know the Lord. He's going to take notice. And he is not going to make life easy. Now, sometimes it's the flesh that we're dealing with. I understand that. But be aware that it is a challenge, and you must be prepared for it at all levels. Most ministries culminate before achieving desired outcomes and goals. You know, think of a beach where the waves are coming in. They culminate on the beach. They up on the shore. They don't, you know, of course, if it's a tidal, what you want is a spiritual tidal wave that keeps going. Okay? Too many times, we don't count the cost. We don't think it through. For heaven's sakes, you don't have to have all the answers, brothers. What you need to do is network. Find people that are good at things. Find out people that have done things. Anything I'm about to do, whether it's an ethnic ministry, a church plant, I find out who's the best in the business. And I don't care where they're at. I don't accept no for an answer. I go to Saddleback. I'll go anywhere. That just came through my mind. I'm not promoting any one ministry. I go anywhere across the nation where I see true spiritual engagement and things are happening, where there's fruit being born out of that and being birthed. That's very, very important. Now, after I understand that, that helps me understand what my outcomes and goals should be and helps me through some of the potholes. But most ministries, they don't think about it. And you know what we do again and again? We celebrate, okay, well, you know, God gave us this and we're happy. I mean, I'm not trying to be ugly. I'm just saying that a lot of times we're not getting the best at it because we don't think it through. We have not even the support. We're the follow-up. We never thought, wow, we never thought we'd have 100 people come to know the Lord. Okay? Well, think about it. Have some contingencies. Okay, accountability and spiritual effectiveness. Wow. I don't care where you are. This is important. There is a direct link between spiritual effectiveness and accountability, folks. I know we're all autonomous, but you can take that too far. You better have somebody in your personal life that you're accountable to, and you better have something in your church that you're accountable to. You have deacons or elders or whatever your governance is, but you need other pastors that you will be accountable to. spiritually, but also in your ministry work. They say, well, Rich, why didn't that not go well? Why did it fail? Well, then why are you going to do that again? Well, no. What makes you think you're not going to do it again? Because as long as I've known you, you've done it three times. Is there anybody talking to you like that? You know, okay, let me just peel back the page. In the military, it happens all the time, by the way. In the business, I guarantee it happens all the time. It happens in the political arena all the time. Why aren't we having accountability? We do the spiritual aspect, which we should, but it is also on our the way we do ministry, the way we conduct our ministry. Those need to be accountable as well. And you will have be more spiritually effective by that. You'll be sharper. You'll be stronger by it, okay? Now, there's no substitute for leadership. I can't tell you. You can learn leadership, by the way. I think some people are born with a gifting. I do believe it's a gift. But I also believe that you can learn. There's so much you can learn. And the best way to learn is from a good, competent leader. Now, just take a moment and think in your mind, who's one of the best leaders you've ever known in your life? Just think of that person in your mind right now. Now, the question is, when was the last time you spoke with him or her? Surround yourself with good leaders from all walks of life, business, ministry, you name it. There was a study that was done by the North American Mission Board on church planting. And they wanted to see if programmatic churches versus purpose-driven churches, which one were doing better, which were stronger. And they found out they had the same failure rate with both. You know what they found out was the difference with both groups that were successful? Leadership. So it really doesn't matter the process you use. What matters most is your leadership. Because applying these things is an artwork. And the best way to learn is from other leaders. I think you probably heard me say this a lot already today. Spiritual success is spelled P-R-A-Y-E-R and hard work, W-O-R-K. It is really a lot of work. It can be joyous work. It should be joyous work. But I'm going to tell you what, it's not fun when you come away from a meeting and somebody has just chewed you out and somebody has told you how terrible you are as a pastor. And you go home and your daughter is jumping up and down and she wants your time and attention and you feel like dirt. And it requires a lot of time and prayer. And and sometimes you got to unload some of that. That's why you need other brothers and sisters in ministry. And I tell you what, it doesn't get any easier in the urban environment. Close quarters mean that there's more people in your face. And so you got to take some time to think about these things. It requires a real depth of prayer. The biggest breakthroughs in my life and in ministry have come through prayer. And I know, I suspect the reason is the Lord definitely wants that. He wants our attention. He wants our time. And He wants to transform us. And you've heard this a lot from me today. The enemy highly encourages ministers to go it alone. You know, if Satan can talk you into being the Long Ranger, boy, he's going to hope for that. Because sooner or later, you're going to run out of steam. And there's some of you in here that are, for heaven's sakes, without trying to sound, arrogant, God, there are gifts that I have that God's given me that I'm fairly good at. And I've seen a lot of the great success. But I've also been at points where I was burnt out, and that was my fault. The things I do today that are, I think, are successful come from years of failure. I have learned the hard way. You don't have to learn the hard way. Learn from the best practice. And the best way to do that is having accountability partners above and beyond the spiritual. As spiritual aspects is a given. You got to have it. But you got to have people that can help you be resilient, sharp, and help you go to the next level. That's very, very important. and don't go it alone. Well, we most need in these urban environments is hope. People and communities, they need hope. And you know, you may be going through that tough time that somebody gave you a tough time, but you've got to be able to give hope. Hope is very, very important. You've got to be inspiring. A leader doesn't get a day off. It's a lonely place to be. That's why you've got to have buddies across town or whatever that you can be with. Let me give you a story. The Civil War at Gettysburg. On the left line of the Union Army with a group of men from Maine. Their commander was Colonel Chamberlain. And Chamberlain that day saved the whole Union Army by fixing bayonets. They were out of ammunition. And he said, and he did a pivot turn where everybody came online and they had the hill on their side and went down the hill and they captured Confederate soldiers that were coming up the hill at that time. It was a very bold thing to do and was very successful. He received the Congressional Medal of Honor for that. But that's not the true greatest thing that Chamberlain gave. It was also his unit that was back down south when all the trench warfare was going on, when Virginia was and Richmond was protected by this whole line of trench works, and it was his regiment had been moved forward, and they said, okay, now you're next in line, attack the trench, attack the berm. And he said, are you kidding me? I said, we're not ready yet. We don't have the artillery set up. We don't have this. And he said, well, no, they want you to go. And he said, you know, of course, I pretty much can figure out what he was thinking. And so he gets his men on line, and he moves forward. And as he's moving forward, he takes a round. It goes in through somewhere around here in his midsection, comes back out top of his back. He has a pistol and he has a saber. He takes a saber and pushes it in the ground to hold him up. And he takes his pistol and points his men like this and holds through all that pain. His men go over the berm and take the Confederate line. Only after all his men had reached over the hill did he allow himself to fall down and collapse. A couple things. One, they thought he was going to die. General Grant awarded him a brigadier general because in honor of him. He didn't die. That group of men had been through so many battles with him. And they saw their commander standing there in the middle, pointing. They kept their hope up. They kept moving. If it wasn't for that unit, this is how significant. That unit, that was the breaking of the line. And where they went from there, they took Richmond and they went to Appomattox. It was that unit that saved the Union at Gettysburg. It was that unit and that general that saved the Union and stopped a lot more bloodshed right there by standing his ground and giving hope to his men. At Appomattox, the general who accepted the surrender was Chamberlain. By acclaim, all the generals said he's the man. And when they came in, I think it was General Cook, from the Confederate side. General came up on his horse. He had lost a leg. He'd lost an arm. And Chamberlain called all the Union soldiers to attention. And I told him to present arms. The soldiers hesitated. He was on his horse. And he said, gentlemen, I told you to present arms. And the whole Union Army finally came to attention and presented arms and saluted the Confederates. As the general came by, the general, with one arm, one leg only still, he rears his horse up in the air. He takes out his saber. He salutes back and comes back and said, you did more in that one gesture of honor to heal our nation than you will ever know, sir. And then at that point, he surrendered. Here's the point. You as a pastor, you as a denominational worker have got to give hope. You're going to get shot. And you're going to have to take something and hold up. Someone's going to have to hold your arms up like Moses had somebody holding his arms up. You've got to have people like that. And you've got to stand your ground. And you've got to point people across the hill because that's what they need. And that's what we're called to do. And so I would encourage you that because that is, at the end of the day, the most important thing for the cities. Because I'm in the cities every day, and there's hopelessness everywhere, everywhere you look. Well, after that story, I'll tell you what we do. Let's do this. We've been at it for a while. Let's take one last break, and then we'll finish up. I want to say I am going to give everybody a chance to share a little bit and ask questions towards the end, right before we eat. But I thank you for your attention. I hope some of this is hitting the spot or giving you some ideas of how you can go about it.